welcome everyone to the kinus before Rosh Hashanah and Brishus Tachashim Amara Da'atzer, Rav Melman. I'd like to welcome everyone here. And I'm delighted that, Baruch Hashem, there's not too many empty seats, and maybe those will fill up also. The Chofetz Chaim would say, the Lashon Lasek B'Divrei Torah, we engage in Torah study, and it's said over in his name that we understand Lasek like Asek, business. And as we know, when a person is involved in business, he opens a storefront on Broadway, he puts all his creativity in it, he puts all his energy, all his devotion, he becomes a very good businessman, he's very interested in being successful. And he also may engage a financial analyst, a business expert, to teach him or to guide him how he can be successful. This is a very important thing. So too when it comes to Torah. And I could add tonight, when it comes to tshuva and Rosh Hashanah, we need a tshuva expert, someone to inspire us. We have to take it very seriously. We have to put all our energy, all our creativity, all our being in preparing for the Rosh Hashanah. In understanding that, we asked Rabbi Krohn to come here and give us some tshuva advice that we could, the asik of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Mitzvah, we could engage in and be zeicha to a ksiva chsima taiva, to help us be zeicha to a ksiva chsima taiva. It's my pleasure to ask Rabbi Krohn to come and inspire us with Divrei Osiris.
Special schus have been invited by the Rosh HaKoilo, Rabbi Blumberg, and Avrami Wolpin to speak to all of you. I see Rabbi Schiffel here. It's an honor to speak in his presence. Rabbi Melman, who's had the opportunity to share many simchas here together. I hope, as Rabbi Blumberg mentioned, that hopefully we'll be able to be inspired in the inyanim of tshuva. I recently heard a tremendous vart from the Bava Verebi. I was at a hotel, a Chassidish hotel for Shabbos. There were 150 couples, 130 had Strimlach, the other 20 had upturned hats, and then there was me, without the beard, without the upturned hat. So at the end of Motzei Shabbos, a fellow comes over to me, he says, Rebbe Krohn, I want you to know this was the best Chassidish Shabbos I ever had in English. But in order to pay me back, he wanted to tell me a vart. He told me a vart from the Bava Verebi that is literally the essence of what we're going to talk about tonight. The Rebbe said that sometimes a person in Elul can look back at the previous year and he'll think to himself, you know something, last year I made up my mind that I was going to improve in my learning, and I really did. And there's some who can look back and say, you know, I made up my mind I was going to be more conscientious as far as davening, going to minyan, and I really was. So I really improved this past year. And somebody could look at himself and say, you know, I made up my mind I was going to do Chesed, I was going to be an Oy of Yisrael, and I really did improve. So for a person like that, Elul maybe is not as foreboding or is not as frightening as it is for the rest of us. So the Rebbe said that Elul stands for Echad La'Oyla V'Echad L'Chatas. Echad La'Oyla, for that person who just has to elevate himself. He's been fine, he's done good, but he has to elevate himself. For that alone, Elul is there for introspection and for a time of reflection of how a person can improve. And then for the rest of us, of course, it's Echad L'Chatas as well. For those of us who look back on the year and think about certain things that we did that we're not proud of, certain things that we feel that we have to improve, that's what Elul is all about. We have just a few days left in Elul. So for every single one of us, whether we're an Oyla person or a Chatas person, tonight is a night to think, to sit back and reflect on how we can improve on the upcoming year. There's a magnificent Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh is right in the beginning of Parshas Re'eh. And it says, Re'eh Anochi Noitzein Lefneichem Hayoyim Brocha Klola. The Rebbeinu Shalom says, I give you two paths. The path of blessing, or Chas V'Shalom, the path of curse, Klola. And the Or HaChaim gives a very interesting mashal, a parable. He says it's like an old wise man that's standing at the fork of a road, and he sees all the young people coming, and he wants to give them advice. And he tells them, he says, I want you to know there are two paths that you can choose from. And listen to the words carefully, you'll see how important it is. He says, the first path is Chilosai Kaitzim V'Soifai Mishar. Chilosai Kaitzim means, in the beginning there are thorns. It's a difficult path. It's not an easy path to go on. But if you make that decision, and you're ready to go through the consequences, to go through the difficult times, Soifai Mishar, at the end it'll be smooth. At the end it'll be bracha for you. And then the other path is just the opposite. Chilosai Mishar, it's the easy way out. A person sees he can make an extra commission. It's not exactly legal. It's not exactly kosher according to Kosher Mishpat. But it's the easy way out. He feels nobody's going to know the difference. But then at the end, Soifai Kaitzim, at the end, there's a price to pay. Beruchnius, Begashmius. So of course, the people have to make that choice. That's what the Orach Chaim tells us. So a close friend of mine, Rabbi Yaron Havatal, told me that he heard recently, he didn't remember from who he heard it, and he said like this, Rabois machshavois belevish. There are many machshavos, we have many plans in our own mind of how we're going to improve. V'yatzat Hashem, what is the etzah of the Rabbeinu Shlalom, hi sakum. If we follow the guidance of the Rabbeinu Shlalom, that's going to be everlasting. Sakum is chilosai koitzim v'soifai mishar. Mamish hafla v'fela. Sakum, what is everlasting? That path that is not necessarily easy in the beginning. Chilosai koitzim v'soifai mishar. And that's what we're going to learn about tonight. We're going to learn about taking the path, taking the road. It's not always going to be easy. It's going to mean a lot of different commitments, changes in our lives. But if we take that path, Chilosai koitzim, then Be'ezes Hashem, it can be Sefer Mishar. The famous Pasuk, all of us know the Pasuk, and many of you certainly know the Chassidish Drush on this Pasuk. In Amos Gimel Pasuk Ches, Aryeh Shog Mila Yira, if a lion is roaring, wouldn't we be afraid? So Chassidish Svarim say, Aryeh stands for Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, and Hashanah Rabbah. Aryeh, if you saw a lion on West End Avenue, everybody would be terrified. These days are coming upon us. Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, Hashanah Rabbah, when the Siyum HaDin is written, when it's sealed, Milo Yira, shouldn't we be afraid? So I want to tell you how I believe that we can approach these days. But I want to start with something that's very chaviv to me, very special to me. All of you here know that I'm a Mayel. So I want to just lead into this topic with something very interesting that has to do with Bris Milah, and as we see in a moment, how we get to Tshuva. We all know that a little boy gets his name out of Bris. Why does a little boy get a name out of Bris? What's the mocha, what's the source for that minig in Klal Yisrael? And the Svarim write, because Avram Avinu himself, before he was at his Bris, the Rabbi Shalom says to him, V'lo yikore yoydeshim ha Avram. Your name will no longer be Avram, Vayashim Cha Avraham. Your name is going to be Avraham. The letter Hey was added before Avram Avinu had his Bris. That's why, being that Avram had a new name by the Bris, that's why we give a child a name after Bris. But what's interesting is not only was Avram's name changed, but Sarai's name was changed before the Bris also. Vayayim Elokim al Avram, Sarai Yishtecha. Your wife Sarai, Lo Yitzikra Shema, Sarai Ki Sarah Shema. She also has now a new name. So I was wondering, Hashem, if you got 22 letters in the Jewish alphabet and you used the Hey already for Avram, you couldn't find another letter for Sarai? Why did she have to have the same letter, the same Hey? What, spelt letters? If you want to change her name? So it occurred to me the answer is as follows. The Gemara Menachos Chavtes Amad Beis tells us that the world was created with the letter Hey. And I want you to take a look at the letter Hey, just so that you have in mind, you understand, as we'll see in a moment, what is so significant that the world was created with the letter Hey. So the Gemara says, Eila to'odoy shamayim va'oretz behi barom, this is the history of the world when it was created, al tikri behi barom, ela behei barom, was created with a Hey. So the Medrash tells us, what does it mean, behei barom? Just like the easiest letter to pronounce is the Hey. For example, you don't need any part of the mouth. Like, for example, if you want to pronounce the letter tough, you need a tongue to say tough. You want to say shin, you have to have teeth to say shin. You don't have teeth, you can't say shin. Mem, you have to have lips. But hey, just breathe it out. Hey, it's easy. You don't need anything. You don't need teeth. You don't need a throat. You don't need a tongue. Hey, just breathe it out. That's what the Medrash says. That's why it means that the world was created with a hey, it was so easy for Hashem. But the Gemara Menachos tells us a different thing. The Gemara Menachos Chavtes tells us that what does it mean that the world was created with a hey? That no matter how far a person has fallen, when a person does Averis and he's not careful, he can fall to Sha'ol Tachtis. There's no bottom, there's no end to the amount that a person can fall. But every person has to know that the door is always open to tshuva. That's what it means that the world was created with the letter hey. That no matter how far a person fell, no matter what happened in his life during the past year, no person should ever give up. No person should ever have chalitzas hadas. Because as far as a person has fallen, this door is always open for tshuva. That's what it means that the world was created with the letter hey. Now we're going to see something so remarkable that unless I quoted the source, you would say it's a chassidish of art. But this is in the Tur Arachayim Simen Kuf Tezvav. And he writes like this. The bracha of Hashiveinu, the bracha of tshuva in Shemay Netzrei, he writes, begins with a hey, Hashiveinu Avinu L'Tzeresecha, and it ends with a hey. Baruch Ata Hashem Haroitze B'Tshuva. Why? Zok the Tur, V'Habrocha Mascheles B'Hei, U'Mesayemes B'Hei, which is equal to 10, that's the Aseret Yimei Tshuva. In other words, the fifth bracha, it had to be the fifth bracha. The fifth bracha in Shemoneh Esra is the bracha of tshuva. It begins with a hey, it ends with a hey, because hey symbolizes tshuva. And I'll tell you a fascinating thing. Any of us here who daven Sfard, Nusach Sfard or Nusach Ashkenaz can tell you that in every single bracha of Shemoneh Esra, it's different. In Atah Kodesh, we say Kikel Kodesh, but Ashkenaz doesn't say it. In Rufa'enu, you have extra words by Sfard. In Shemat Aleinu, every bracha of the middle part of Shemoneh Esra is different, except one. Hashiveinu. Sfardim, Ashkenazim, it's the universal bracha of tshuva. It's the exact same. Begins with hey, it ends with hey, it has a certain same amount of words. Yesh bo tezvav tevois, it has 15 words because of that pasuk, Yazav Rosh Adarkai, which also has 15. Tshuva is universal. No matter where you come from, no matter what you did, no matter what you thought about, that door is always open for tshuva. And that's how we have to approach Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Hashanah Rabbah. To be reflective, but not to be afraid. To understand that it's within our capacity that every one of us is able to do tshuva. So what's the approach? How do we approach it if we believe in our hearts that we can do tshuva? So I want to tell you a fascinating story that's brought in Tanakh, and many of us are not necessarily familiar when many of us know Yeshua and Shoftim, but then when you come to Shmuel and Malachim, it kind of gets cloudy. So I want to tell you about a king, a remarkable king. He is such a remarkable king, you will hear in a moment what the Tanakh writes about him. This is the king Yeshiyahu HaMelech. Yeshiyahu HaMelech was a king during the first Beis HaMikdash. Listen to what the Pasuk writes about him. There was never, ever a king that returned to Hashem. Could you imagine? That's a play on the words, obviously, of Krishna. So here's a person who returned to Hashem, there was never a king like him. Who is this man? Yeshiyahu. That he was such an incredible person that he returned to Hashem in such a way that nobody ever returned to Hashem like him and nobody ever will. Incredible human being. Who was this man? So if you look in Tanakh, in Malachim Beis, it tells us the story about him. You see, it may be hard for us to believe that if there would be a Beis HaMikdash, that there would actually be people who wouldn't go to daven there. If we had a Beis HaMikdash, we'd all be there. Everybody would go daven, we'd bring kabbonis, we'd feel a closeness to Hashem. But during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, there were many people who let it lapse. And it became a very broken down place. The Beit HaMikdash wasn't Chorev, but it wasn't as beautiful as it once was. And Yeshayahu was waiting for the right time to have this rebuilt, to have it refurbished. And he knew that the Kohen, Chilkiyahu, the Kohen Gadol, was stashing away money for just the right time when the king would tell him, now's the time that we're going to refurbish the Beit HaMikdash and we'll get everybody back. So Yeshayahu was working very hard to get people to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to do tshuva. And then he decides one day, now's the time. So he calls his secretary Shofan, and he says, Shofan, I want you to go to the king, tell him that he should look into his treasure chest, and over there he's going to see that he has enough money, and now's the time that we should begin refurbishing and rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, and everybody's going to come back. An incredible thing happens. Shofan goes to the king, they go down to the basement where they have the treasure chest, and they open up the treasure chest. Now I believe from this thing that I'm going to tell you, I believe Velev Shalom, that when anyone gets an aliyah, except the Kohen or a Levi, because the Kohen and the Levi, they always get the same aliyahs. But I believe that when you get an aliyah, there's a message for you in the Torah that the Eibishter wants you to hear. The Gabbai could have given you Shlishi, Revi, Chamishi, Shish, could have given you anything. He chose to give you that Min HaShemayim because there's a message. And we learn it from here. Because they opened up the treasure chest and there was a Sefer Torah. And the Sefer Torah is open to the Pasuk in Parshas Kisavai, which says like this, Arur, asher lo yokim es divrei ha-Torah azois. Cursed is the one who doesn't observe this Torah. And they open up, Shofan and Chukio open up the treasure chest, and they see this Pasuk staring them in the face, and they consider it a terrible omen. And they run back to the king Yeshayahu, and they say, Rabbeinu Da'ama, look what happened here. We came to get the money, the Sefer Torah is open, look where it's open. It's a curse for us. Yeshayahu says, I got to see it myself. He comes running to the treasure chest. He opens up the treasure chest, and sure enough, there's the Pasuk. Arur asher lo yokim es divrei ha-Torah hazois. And the Yerushalmi and Sota tells us what happens next. Yeshayahu takes a look at this Pasuk, and the Yerushalmi writes like this, Al hadavar hazeh koru Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu saw that Pasuk, and he screams out two words, and those are the words that we all have to say in our minds and in our hearts. Olay lahokim. The Torah is telling us, Arur asher lo yokim, Olay lahokim. I will undertake it. I will observe it. And when he says those words, listen to what the Yerushalmi tells us. Mamish frightening. Omar Abasi, Lomad. If a person learned, Velimed, and he taught, Veshomar, and he observed, Va'asa, and he did, Va'yasipek biyodei lahachzik, he was able to be machazik another yid, Va'loyichzik, he was only worried about himself. He was only worried about his Talmud. But that guy down the block that needed chizuk, he didn't give him chizuk. But like chizuk, I raised the bechlal oro. That's a cursed person. It's not enough if you learn. It's not enough if you teach. There are people out there that need your friendship. They need your chizuk. They need your arm around them. That's what Olay Lahokim means. Olay Lahokim means that a person understands that you're part of the cloud. Not only yourself and your immediate family, but all of Klal Yisrael, all those broken-hearted people, spiritually and physically, that need chizuk, that's what it's all about. Otherwise, chas v'shalom, hareza b'chlal oro. So if we believe tonight that every one of us must make this commitment of Olay Lahokim, that we are going to observe this Torah, and this is the Elo that we're going to finally change, we can change, we can accomplish, and we can influence others. And I want to tell you how we can do it. A great lesson that Rabbi Friend once told over this tremendous story. It was a fellow from here in Manhattan. Came to visit Rav Velvo Soloveitchik many, many years ago. Came to Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to Rav Velvo, and they get into a whole conversation. So Rav Velvo says, what are you? So the man says, I'm a lawyer. I live in Manhattan, and I do law. And they continue a conversation. And a few minutes later, the Rav asks him again. He says, what are you? I was surprised. I mean, the Soloveitchiks are geniuses, right? He just told him 5 minutes ago that he's a lawyer. He said, Rebbe, I'm a lawyer. I work in Manhattan. He does law work. So the Rabriska Rav Velvo got very serious. And he said to him, that's not how a Yid answers that question. And he says, take out a Yoina. You take out a Yoina, which we read in Yom Kippur. We all know the story. Yoina's on the boat, and the boat is shaking. And everybody realizes that there's something wrong because the boat, the storm is only around this boat. So they know it's somebody's fault on this boat. And they go around, Vayoyma, and they said to him, to Yoina, Hagidolanu, Mamalachtacha, what are you? What do you do? And you know what he answers? Listen what he answers. Vayoyma, he says to them, Ivri Anoichi, I am a Yid. Oh, Vet Hashem Alakei Hashemayim Aniyorei. That was his answer when they asked him, what do you do? He said, I'm a Yid and I fear Hashem. Zokta Radak. Kiven Sha'omar Hashem Alakei Hashemayim Aniyorei. Hey Shiv Lahem Al Shelosa Mamalachtacha. When he said, I'm a Yid, that's the answer. You're not a lawyer. You're not a doctor. You're not a graphic artist. You're not a negotiator. That's how you bring money into the house. Your job doesn't define you. Ivri Anoichi, that defines you. Mamalachtacha, you're a Yid. And you have an achrayus to a fellow Yid. That's what you're all about. And if we understand that that's the priority in our lives, not the jobs that we have. Everybody has to bring in money. So everybody does it a different way. But doesn't define you. What defines you is Ivri Anoichi. So my friend told me that after he told this drasha in Baltimore, he told over this story, a few weeks later he gets a letter from a fellow. The guy's a stockbroker. And he writes, Rabbi friend, I want you to know, after I heard that story, you know, many times I'm on the phone, and many times I have the opportunity to make a business deal that might not be as kosher as it should be. So I had a paperweight made. And on the paperweight, which sits right on my desk, it's two words. Ivri Anoichi. That's how we have to remember life. That's what we're all about. The next time you want to do something, right or wrong, look at that paperweight in your mind. Ivri Anoichi. You're a Yid first and priority. That's how we begin to approach what Elul is all about. We talk about the Sforim, the Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesim, Psuchim Lefanecha. For me personally, it's very painful to think about it. Because last year at this time, my mother, Hashalom, was still alive. She passed away. She was an almana for 40 long years. When I was 21, my father passed away. My mother never, ever recovered from it. 40 years. We walked down all my brothers and sisters to the chasanas. And I knew, I said to my wife last year, just about this time, there's no way that she's going to go through another Shmini Atzeres, which was my father's yard site. Her neshama just won't last. And sure enough, she passed away a few days before Shmini Atzeres. We sat Shiva this past year the exact same way that we sat Shiva 40 years ago. Right after Yontif, we sat down Shiva after Shmini Atzeres, after Simchat Torah 40 years ago. Same thing this year. Now, over the 40 years, I became very, very close to her. We had a very, very close, tight relationship. And there was nothing that I could not talk to her about. Nothing. Except one thing. Her age. She never, ever told me how old she was. She wouldn't even tell me her birthday. And if I would ever say to her, Ma, you know, people at your age do this and this, she, don't talk to me about my age. That was taboo. We couldn't talk about it at all. Okay, I respected that. Fine. Entitled. But I knew that when I was going to start sitting Shiva, one of the first questions that people asked was how old she was. Now, it's not for tonight to talk about how to be Menachem Avil someone. If it was up to me, I would make a gzeira on Klal Yisrael. You are not allowed to ask about the illness of the person. It has nothing to do with the person, whether they did suffer or didn't suffer. It doesn't define them. It just brings tzar to the people who have to talk about it. It's not the definition of what the person was. Don't bring it up. It means nothing. But I knew people are going to ask that anyway. And they would ask her age. What am I going to say? I don't know. It's not your business. She didn't want me to know. I didn't want to sound foolish. I was always under the impression she was born in 1919. So I went to Rav Zelig Epstein. The Rosh Yeshiva in our neighborhood in Yeshiva Shah Torah was still Simchas Torah. I went in, you know, by the Akofis. I took him on the side. I said, listen, I'm sitting Shiva. I'm starting Shiva tonight. You know, what should I do? I didn't know what to do. I know people are going to ask me. And you know, what should I say? You know, my mother, I know, wouldn't want anybody to know, and she certainly wouldn't want me to talk about it. He said, "Not, you could tell. You could say." I said, "Really?" He said, "Not. She was only machbid, you know, during her lifetime. Shouldn't be an ayin hara. But after Lacham Yisosa, it's not a problem. You could say." And the truth is, I was amazed at what he said, because even though he really didn't know my mother, but imamish hit it on the mark, because my mother was so frum. I mean, she was as frum as Rabbi Sol Salanta. I'll tell you a story. This imamish happened. Rabbi Sol Salanta was once sitting at the table, literally, on Pesach, by the Seder, and he said, "Raboisai, 6 months to Rosh Hashanah. You got to do tshuva." My mother, we were once sitting Rosh Hashanah at the table, and she said, "Get the sefer off the table. It's 6 months to Pesach." I remember I took my mother once. We once had a shaila in the family, so we went to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. This shaila had to do something with about her traveling to Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yaakov asked her, you know, Rabbi Yaakov's here, I'm sitting here, my mother's here. So Rabbi Yaakov asked her, he says, "Why do you want to go to Eretz Yisrael?" So she says she wants to see the grandchildren. I have a sister who's been living in Eretz Yisrael for many years. So Rabbi Yaakov asked her, he says, "How many grandchildren do you have?" She doesn't answer. I said, "Ma, the Rosh Hashiva asked you something." I heard him. I knew what she didn't want to say. I'm so embarrassed. You know, I'm going to teach the God Ladur something. I said, "In Shuldig, Rashiva." You know, my mother, I said in Yiddish, my mama Vilna Zog, she doesn't want to say, I in Hora. So Rabbi Yaakov's talking to me, but he's really talking to her. He says, "Ken Zog and Dai Mama, that I hold that everybody who has grandchildren should count them and be grateful for every single one of them." And she still didn't tell him. Okay, so I figured, so this is what happened. So once they started sitting Shiva, people came to the house, they read the first day, they started asking, "Well, you know, how old was your mother?" So this is what I said for the first 2 days. I said, "Listen, I believe she was born in 1919. I never figured out how old she was. If it really bothers you, you do the math and, you know, you keep it to yourself." After 2 days, I get a call from my cousin, Eretz Yisrael. He says to me, "What are you talking about? Your mother was born 1919. Our father," my cousin says to me, "he was younger than your mother, and he was born in 1919, so your mother was born before that." And then a couple days later, I get a call from a cousin in Borough Park. "What are you talking about? Your mother was born in 1918. We have a letter. You know that our mother is younger than your mother, and our mother was born in 1918. So, like my brother said, "Return your day of Yasser, David should does those who respect him." I still don't know, I still don't care. But then I started telling people, you know something? It really doesn't make a difference how old the person was. The most important thing is what you do with your dash. People look at me, what? I said, "The dash, you don't know what that means? It's the most important thing, what you do with your dash." Everybody's looking at me, "What are you talking about?" See, there's a great poem. I'm going to read you two parts of the poem. See, when they put up on a monument, they say a person lived 1900-1975. Does it really make a difference when a person was born or when a person died? Shmuel HaNavi lived till he was 52. Darizal lived till he was 36. Shlomo HaMelech lived till he was 52. What was important is not when they lived and when they died, and how long they lived and died. The most important thing is what they did with their dash. So let me read you this poem, "How to Live Your Dash." If you want to know where you could look it up, you know how to find it. Right? I'm on tape, so I don't want to get in trouble, but you know how to find it. "It matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and act, and how we live our dash. So when your eulogy is being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of what it said about how you spent your dash?" And that's really, when we think about Elul and Rosh Hashanah, none of us can guarantee Arich Hashanim. It's a great story that I told in Ger. Mendy Pollack was with us in Ger. We had a great maimed that night in the Big Beis Medrash in Poland. And I told him this story when the Sfas Emes was Nifter. So he died, he was 58 years old. So the Imri Emes by the Levaya, he said to his brother Rabbi Tzalel, "At least our father had a Richas Yomim, longevity." He said, "What do you mean our father had a Richas Yomim? He lived till he was 58, that's not long." He said, "I didn't say he had a Richas Shonim, I said he had a Richas Yomim." It's a tremendous difference between a Richas Shonim and a Richas Yomim. No one, not even Dr. Diamond, can guarantee for anyone Arich HaShonim. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings. No one knows they'll live 40, 60, 80, 90. No one can tell you that. But every one of us can guarantee for ourselves Arichas Yomim. Arichas Yomim means making the most of every day. That's what he said about his father. Our father lived 58 years. That was Arichas Yomim. Every day counted. That's what the dash is all about. You want to know how you live your dash properly? Listen to this word that we said outside the Ponovich Yeshiva in the town of Ponovich. A tremendous, tremendous insight from the Ponovich Rav. The Ponovich Rav asks, it says in Tilim Kuf Mem Dalet Zayin, Shalach Yodecho Mimoroim, Hashem, send your hand from above, Pitzeni V'Hatzileni M'mayim Rabim Miyad B'nei Necha, save me and rescue me from the stormy waters of the Goyim. In other words, the Goyim of the world are considered like waters, raging waters. So the Ponovich Rav asks, but in Avadya Aleph Pasuk Yud Ches it says, V'hoye Beis Yaakov Eish U'Beis Yosef Lahava, Klal Yisrael is a fire. So the point of it, Yerubba asks, what happens when water touches fire? The water puts out the fire. Is that what Tanakh is trying to teach us? That at the end of time, the water is going to put out the fire at the end of Klal Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom? Zok the point of it, Yerubba, a gevaldike insight. When does water put out the fire? When it touches it. But if there's a mechitza, if there's a pot in between, oh, then the fire controls the water. You have the fire, and you have the water in the pot, and there's a mechitza, then the fire is going to control whether the water is hot or cold. It can even dissipate and dissolve all of the water if the fire is on long enough. That's how you live. When we have a mechitza, we live in Gaulis. We shouldn't be thinking like them. We shouldn't be talking like them, acting like them, dressing like them. If we do all those things like they do, then you have assimilation. Then you have assimilation worse what's happening in America than what happened in Germany. We're losing millions of Yidden all over the world. Why? Because of assimilation. Because there's no mechitzas, there's no barriers. You have to live with the ghetto of your mind. A ghetto sounds like a terrible thing, but without a mechitza, the water's touching the fire. We're losing so many. But when a person has that barrier, all of a sudden, then there's a difference. Then the fire is in control. So how are we going to change? I'm going to give you three ways that we're going to change, and then four ways how to implement these changes. Here's the first thing. I remember Rav Geli told me this story. Rav Geli told me that there was a Rav from Sunderland that came to collect money for his yeshiva in Sunderland, which is northern part of England. The guy was not making too much money, and he was very, very depressed. So he went to Monty, to Rav Yankov Kamenetsky, and he asked Rav Yankov, what should he do? Should he continue collecting for his yeshiva in Sunderland? Just keep on plugging away? Or should he just get enough money for the ticket and just go home? So Rav Yankov said to him, you should definitely continue. And he said, when people ask you why they should give money to the yeshiva in Sunderland, this is what you should tell them. Said you should tell them that you never know on which Torah the world is standing on. The world stands because of Zchus HaTorah. Do we know whether it's the Torah in Lakewood or the Torah in Ponovich or the Torah in Sunderland? And I'm positive what Rav Yankov meant is this Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner writes in the Nefesh HaChaim V'emez B'li Sofik Klal. Rav Chaim writes, I'm positive. If there was any place, any moment, that from one end of the world to the other, if there would be 1 second in the day that there was no Torah being learned anywhere, the whole world would be destroyed. In my humble opinion, that's why I believe Hashem made time zones. Time zones are so inconvenient. You have children in Eretz Yisrael. You got to be up 6 o'clock. You got to wait till 1 o'clock in the morning to call them. Why did Hashem make time zones? Why did Hashem make you have a friend in Australia? It's tomorrow afternoon over there. It's very inconvenient. But I believe Hashem made it because Hashem is up the whole time. He doesn't sleep. He wants to hear Torah every second of the day. That's the only way to have it. Because when we're up, they're sleeping in England. But when we're sleeping, they're learning in England. So Rav Yankov said, you never know, you support Torah all over the world, because you never know what Torah is holding up the world. That's why I believe the pshat in the brach of Shemayin Esrei, in the brach of Birchat HaTorah, v'chayei oylam nota b'secheinu. You know what the pesach of chayei oylam means? Not only chayei oylam, eternal world, chayei oylam mamash. The first thing every single one of us must make a commitment is to limud HaTorah. And as much Torah as we're learning, to try to improve it. There's some people, many of us here, have never gone through all of Tanakh. What age are we going to be by the time we learn Tanakh? Tanakh is not only for little children. The Yesodos of Klal Yisrael are in Tanakh. When are we going to finish Mishnah Berurah? What are we waiting for? There are some people who have never opened up certain Mishnayos. What are we waiting for? Every single one of us must have a Seder, either in Tanakh or in Mishnayos, Avad and Gemara, in Chumash. I want to give you a little bit of advice as far as Chumash is concerned. There are many people, there are certain psukim, of course everybody knows Bereishis and Shemayis, but there are many psukim in Dvarim, if you would quote them, you wouldn't even know where they come from, wouldn't know what parsha they're in. You know what one of the greatest things that happened in our generation is? The Stone Chumash. The Stone Chumash, have a Seder, 2 pages a day in the Stone Chumash. What Avnosan Sherman wrote on Chumash, and don't learn the parsha of the week, take a parsha, start, let's say, from Vayeshev, or start Kedoshim, Kisei, these are my 3 favorite parshas. You take those parshas, and you read 2 pages every day, all of a sudden, forget about the parsha of the week, it's a separate thing. But begin to learn, this is the basic, it all starts with Chumash. So of course, you want to learn Gemara, and that's of course the Ikar Limud. But when are we going to wake up with Chumash and Tanakh and the basics? We're getting older every day, and every day there's another excuse. But this is the year we have to change. We have to begin making a Seder every day in the basics of Yados. That's the first thing. Second thing, I'll never forget the first huge Siyum HaShas in Madison Square Garden. Of course, there were 2 things that night that can never forget. Those of us who were there, Rav Blazer Ginsburg's Ma'ariv, unbelievable. I never forget, on the scoreboard they had only one United Minyan. Whoever thought of that idea was just genius. That Shema Yisrael, if you remember it, was worth the whole night. 20,000 people crying out Shema Yisrael, every Jew, every stripe of Jew. Incredible, man, woman, and child. But the second thing that struck me that night was a comment to Gadol Yisrael, who also should have a Refuah Shleima, Rosh Yeshiva Philadelphia, that he said. He said that when you learn, Hashem is talking to you. And when you daven, you're talking to Hashem. When you learn, whether you learn Chumash, Gemara, Mishnah Berurah, everybody Hashem is talking to you, telling you what he wants from you. But when you daven, you're talking to Hashem, you're telling him what you want from him. And if we have that opportunity, 3 times a day, we have to take advantage of it. You know, Chazal teach us that a person should be from among the first 10. La'olam yashkim odon lebeis haknesses kidei sheyizke veyimne im asara rishonim. It's a tremendous chus to be among the first 10. Because when you are among the first 10, you're the one who brings the Shechina. Everybody else who davens, the Gemara says, has reward for davening with the Shechina, but you get their reward as well. You get a double reward. And as the Mashal explains, because a level, of course, b'chol amokam asher atzker shmi ovei alecha v'rachticha, wherever you daven, even under the stands in right field in the 7th inning, during the 7th inning stretch in Shea Stadium, if you daven there, Hashem comes there also. But when you come 10 people in a Beit HaKnesset, there's a level of Shechina. You're the one who brings that. So I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a story that literally changed me, and if it changed me, it could change everybody else. And I remember the first time that I met the fellow who the story happened to, because for years I was telling the story, I didn't know to whom it happened to, he didn't want his name mentioned. I hugged him and I embraced him and I told him, you have changed literally hundreds if not thousands of people with your story, what you went through. Listen to this. The guy doesn't want, I should say, what city he comes from or what type of store he had. So I'm going to tell you a story about a furniture store in Milwaukee. It didn't happen in Milwaukee. It didn't happen in a furniture store. But listen to a great story about a furniture store in Milwaukee. Listen to this. This fellow comes in the morning, 9 o'clock. He owns the store. By 10 o'clock, he thought he smelled smoke. He's feeling suspicious. He runs downstairs to the basement, and sure enough, the place is aflame. He tries to put out the fire in the basement, but he can't. It's too big. And he runs back upstairs. By the time he runs back upstairs, the smoke and the fire have come through the slats of the floor on the first floor, and it's already catching onto the desk and the tables and the curtains. And of course, he calls the fire department. And by the time the fire department came, the place was gutted. The only thing that they could save was the next door store. They were able to hose it down. A few days after the fire, the guy comes into shul and he says to a friend of mine, he says, I want to tell you what happened a couple days before the fire. He said, a couple days before the fire, I came into shul, and the guy comes over to me and he says to me like this. He says, you know, every day you come to shul, but every day you come late. Why do you come late every day? It's true, you come to shul, but every day you come late. Why do you come late? So I answered him, what's the difference? At the end I come, right? Hashem showed me. The fire department, at the end they also came. Imagine a guy to be matzdik all of a sudden because he made that crack. At the end I come. He said, Hashem showed me. I'll show you what it means, at the end I come. The fire department, they also came at the end. I don't know what the minig is here in this shul. I don't know what the minig is in any of the shuls here. But in my humble opinion, I cannot understand how any yid could go through a day without saying kabbonis in the morning. How could you not say kabbonis? Is there anybody here in his right mind who could say that you never had an impure thought, that you don't have to bring a carbon oila? Is anybody can say that they never did an aveira by mistake, that they don't have to bring a carbon chatas? The whole purpose of davening is because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. That's why it's called aveida. But at 7 o'clock is davening, and you walk in 5 after 7, you're not saying kabbonis. And you're not even saying all the words. Who are we kidding? When you go to a ball game, you want to be there when they throw out the first pitch, right? So you go to Minyan, you should be there when they throw out the first bracha. That means 7 o'clock is davening. 10 to 7 you come here. And you put your towels and tefillin on. So that's 7 o'clock you can start davening. Otherwise it's impossible. Who are we kidding? You can't say all the words. Unless you're davening in a yeshivisha place where they daven very slow. But a business in his Minyan, everybody's rushing. So you got to come on time. At the end I come is not good enough. Besides all the kadeshim that you miss, and the amens, the yeshmei rabba, but just the words of the davening. At the end I come is not good enough. So the first thing is that we have to make a commitment that we're going to learn. We have to make a commitment that our tefillah will come on time to minyan, will be there on time, and daven slow and say every single word. Here's another thing. Very interesting tour, Beis Yosef. Again, you would never think that the tour writes something like this. Friday night, we all know that the challah is covered. Why is the challah covered? So some say because the mon was covered, top and bottom. But the tour writes a different thing. The tour writes, B'shem Yerushalmi, and Simen Reish Ayin Aleph. You take a look in Shulchan Aruch Chaim, Simen Reish Ayin Aleph, Siftes, it's quoted. The Mishnah Brura brings it there. The bread should not see how it's getting embarrassed. What does that mean? Normally tonight if you would go home and you have bread and wine, you always make the bracha on the bread first. But Friday night, because of Kiddush, you have to make a bracha on the wine first because of Kiddush. So the bread might be embarrassed, because after all, usually the challah, you make the bracha first. So the bread shouldn't see how it's getting embarrassed, so that's why you cover it. That's what it says in the tour, B'Shem HaYerushalmi. If that's the case, if you have to worry, so to speak, about inanimate objects, shouldn't we have to worry about how we deal with each other? How many times does a husband embarrass a wife at the table Friday night? Or the wife say something unpleasant to the husband? Or to the children? I never used to allow my kids to go away for Shabbos, never. I told them, bring all your friends to us, we'll show them what Shabbos is. One time I let my daughter Elisheva go away for Shabbos. She came back once to Shabbos. She said, Ty, you won't believe what happened. Friday night, we're sitting at the table. By the time the end of the meal, the father had thrown away every kid from the table. The only one that was left was me and him. I didn't even want to ask where the wife was. Sometimes a guy comes home Friday night, the house is not set, the table's not set yet. He makes a comment, Shelo Yira Hapas Boishtoy, the pot is being covered. He's trying to teach you something. We have to learn about human relationships. We have to begin to be a little bit more careful. And I think one of the ways that we can begin being more sensitive to each other is a simple way. HaKaras HaTayif. learn to say thank you. There are many, many people that do things for you that you feel just because they get paid, that's enough. That's not enough. Like we said before, everybody has to bring money into the house. How many people thought to go over to Rabbi Wolpin and tell him thank you for making this year? Thank you for changing it from one venue to another so there should be space. Well, that's his job. He works for the Kollel. Yeah, but he did work for it. I myself spoke to him probably 20 times until we put this all together. So if I spoke to him 20 times, imagine how many hours he spent putting it all together. Anybody thank Rabbi Melman for allowing us to use his shul? Take it for granted. Why? Because he's a nice guy? I have to learn to say thank you. There are a lot of people that do jobs for it. You ever go over to Balkaira and say thank you? When was the last time you went over to Balkaira? When was the last time you tried to prepare laning? Anybody here who prepares laning, who has a child, knows hours it takes. Hey, you think, and as a chas v'shalom, the guy makes two mistakes, all of a sudden everybody's waking up. Right, that's how you get the people to wake up. Three mistakes before Shani, oh, everybody's here already. Why is that? You ever go over to a Shliach Tzibur and say thank you, Yashikaya, for davening? Even if it wasn't that great, you didn't have to daven. You weren't going to go up there, right? He did it for you. I love the story of a little boy, a cute little kid, who goes into a fruit store with his mother. So the man behind the counter gives the kid a banana. So the mother says, what two words do you say to the nice man behind the counter? The little boy says, peel it. Of course. The kid never heard thank you in his life. I'll tell you a story that happened with me. I don't know if you've ever traveled to Canada in the LaGuardia terminal, Air Canada. Air Canada, the whole terminal is like a big U. You go through security, they have about 40 gates. My gate is always the last one for whatever reason, but fine. So this happened about a year and a half ago. I was going to Toronto, I go through security, and I go all the way down to gate 40, and I'm waiting for the plane. To get on the plane, so you're waiting around with a lot of people, everybody's doing their own work. All of a sudden, I see everybody's looking up. And they're looking up, they see two security guards are walking, looking at every gate, as if they're looking for Osama. They're looking for somebody. And everybody's watching. Who are they looking for? They come down all the gates. They come to our gate. And they walk over to me. Excuse me, officer, can I help you? The guy takes something out of his pocket. He says to me, is this your cell phone? I said, no, officer, I have my cell phone. And I start checking. Of course, I got my cell phone in my left pocket. I say, wait a second. I don't have it. I can't believe it. I take a look. I say, you're right. That's my cell phone. How'd you get it? He says, well, sir, when you went through security, you had a lot of things in different bins, and you forgot your cell phone. I thanked him. I said, you know what it means to have to reprogram 300 numbers? Yeah, I thank you so much. I said, officer, I just want to ask you a question. How'd you find me? There's 2,000 people here. So I thought for sure he was going to say, because you're the only guy wearing a black hat. That's what I thought for sure he would say. That's not what he said. He said, do you remember what you said to us as you walked by? I said, no, what did I say? You said to both of us, thank you for being here. He says, thousands of people walk by here a day. Not one person says thank you. You said thank you. We were going to find you if you were the last guy in the terminal. Could you imagine? I mean, forget about the Kiddush Hashem. The guy's a human being, right? He's got a job. He hates the job more than we hate him. Right? You think he wants everybody criticizing him? They have to also put bread on the table. But they're people. And most of us feel safer because they're there. Some semblance of security. Don't they deserve a thank you? Besides the Kiddush Hashem, because you can always tell a guy who's a Yid to wear a hat, a snood, no snood, whatever. You can't hide it. Forget it. You can't hide it. I remember I have a mechutin. His name is Alex Kramer. So I remember one time he tells me he once had to go to Germany. He was working for Bayer Pharmaceuticals. So he works in the computer department. So they had this huge conference in Germany someplace. And he hated going there, but he had no choice. And he's sitting in this huge conference room, a dining hall. And I didn't want to ask him if he wore his yarmulke or not wore his yarmulke. It's not my business. But whatever, he's sitting among all the goyim there. And, you know, he can't eat anything. What could he have? Maybe a beer if he recognizes it, or some water or a fruit or whatever. And he's sitting at the table with all these many, many different people. And there's a strolling violinist. Now, the guy was playing, my mechutin happens to be a maven in classical music, so he was watching the guy, and he was you know, listening, he knows Bach, Beethoven, he knows it all. Mozart, he knows it all. So this strolling violinist is going from table to table, and then he stops right in front of Alex, and he starts playing Hava Nagila. Alex, tell me, he thought he would drop dead on the spot. He's 1 year and 400 Gayim. How does this guy know? That's it, they know. Can't hide it. So when you say thank you, besides, again, the Chilul Hashem, the Kiddush Hashem, rather, that you make, because everybody knows that you're a Yid, but a certain sense of Hakaras HaTov, once you begin thanking your spouse, your kids, the Rebbe's, you know what I always did for my children? I do it for my grandchildren. Kids come home with a nice report card, you write a thank you note to the Rebbe. I remember one time I called Erev Pesach, I'll never forget this. My granddaughter came to the house. They were going to be with us for the Seder. She comes home with this Haggadah. You ever see the Haggadahs the kids come home today with? It's unbelievable. They must start from Hanukkah. I don't know where they get all this information. You know, they got the frogs jumping out and the blood is running and the animals are popping out. It's unbelievable. So I called the teacher. I called the teacher, Erev Yontif. I said, Mrs. Harris, I just want to thank you. Rochel brought home such a Haggadah. I imagine the Seder will be terrific tonight. And I just want to thank you for preparing with her. She said, that's all you're calling about? No complaints? No, just thank you. The next day in shul, I met her husband. She still, the whole Seder, she was talking. Somebody called just to say thank you. When was the last time you called a teacher just to say thank you? Don't they deserve thank you? Aren't they preparing the future of Klal Yisrael? More than any other profession, the Rebbe's and the Moors should really be the highest paid in Klal Yisrael. We all know that. And the Rabbanim too. But, and the Rosh HaKoilos too, right? They're the ones that are really preparing the future of Klal Yisrael. Don't they deserve our Hakaras HaTov? So how are we going to change? How are we going to enhance our lives with Torah, Tefillah, and Avos Yisrael? And there's four ways. The first way is to get a Rebbe. Every one of us has to have a Rav, a Rebbe, or Rosh Hashiva that you ask your Shilas to. You have to ask what school to send your children. You have to ask where you go for vacations. No Yid belongs in Las Vegas. I've got to go for a convention. Fine, get out of there on Shabbos. You don't belong there. No Yid, in my opinion, belongs in Acapulco and Atlantic City. Don't tell me about the Rebbe's who send guys in. They make a lot of money they give to the Klois. It's a mitzvah above Avera. It's not a Rebbe and it's not money. The Yid doesn't belong in these places. Ask a Shaila. Ask a Rav. Where do you go on vacation? Where do you give your stalker? Rav Moshe always used to complain about people never ask these type of Shailas. Rav Yankov always used to complain. I'll tell you a great story that happened with Rav Yankov. I remember before my children were going to yeshiva, my oldest son was 4 years old. So in our neighborhood there were two yeshivas. One more Hasidic type of place and one regular place. Both wonderful places. And I didn't know which one, where to send them. So I decided, listen, Rabbi Yankov always said, you got to ask all these type of shaylas. So I go up to Muncie, and I'm sitting and I'm talking to Rabbi Yankov. And he asked me the advantages and disadvantages, the English curriculum, the Hebrew curriculum of both schools. Now, I don't know what in the world possessed me to tell him this thing. But I said to him that in one of the schools, the policy of the Menahel is that every Rebbe has to have a beard. That was the policy of the school. They wouldn't hire a Rebbe if he didn't have a beard. And the other school, in Sfas Moshe, not every Rebbe had a beard. So Rabbi Yankov said to me, why don't you have a beard? So I told him whatever reason. He says, you have to send to the other place. You have to send to Tiferes Moshe. I said, I said, Rosh Hashim, of course I'll send, but why do I have to send? Listen to what he said. Only a God Lador could think like this. He said, if you send to a place where the policy is that the Rebbe has to have a beard, by the time your kid is in 8th grade, by osmosis, he's going to look at you, his father, and think you're a goy. Imagine that insight. He says, I'll never say it. Chas v'sholom, never say anything like that. But if that's the policy of the school, that's the underlying message. So of course I sent both my boys to Tiferes Moshe. Baruch Hashem, they both finished shas today and both of them have beards. Don't hit me once. Here's the second way. Small Kabbalahs. You want to change? Don't make big, tremendous Kabbalahs. It'll never happen. It'll last 3 days. That's it. Small Kabbalahs, small things. Rav Segal used to say, Emor ma'at vaseh harbeh. You do a little, you undertake a little, then you'll end up doing. Not you're going to learn a Perek Mishnayos every day. It's not going to happen. in the beginning. Two Mishnayos a day. If women want to start saying Tilim, they haven't started saying Tilim, two Parokim a day. The most five, don't say more. It'll drop, you can't do it. You can't go from not doing anything to doing too much at one time. Small Kabbalahs. Today there are so many wonderful tapes, CDs, iPods, MP3s, whatever you want. Many of us are on the road hours and hours and hours. Women are in the kitchen, women are in the house doing housework. Shouldn't we make a Kabbalah that will hear two Torah tapes a week? There's so many great tapes. Rabbi Fran, Rabbi Reisman, Rabbi Miller of Shalom. Listen to a David Orlovsky tape, then you'll see what a tape is all about. Besides that, it's hysterical, but also the Teichen. Rabbi Rieri, I mean, the whole of Gateways, the whole group of them. Oh, there's so much. Don't make up you can listen to two tapes a week. My son today had to drive from Waterbury to Philadelphia. He told me he heard two tapes from Rabbi Reiser, one on Ben Sira, one on another topic. Where do you get information like this? It's so beautiful. It's mamish ready-made for us. Small Kabbalahs. You know what I believe? Can change, literally change your life. Undertake to do without fail a chesed for another yid every day. You think that you do chesed for everybody, but many days you don't. You're just involved with yourself. We're all involved in ourselves. Write it down. That's the third thing. Write it down. If you write it down, I guarantee you after a month that book will become your most treasured possession. Hashem Tucha, Hashem is your shadow. You want Hashem to do good for you, do good for others. Not your husband for the wife for the husband. That you got to do if you know what's good for you. I'm talking about outside the house. So people say to me, outside the house. Yeah, inside the house. Of course you got to do inside the house. But that's not how you train yourself to become a Baal Chesed. Then you'll see what a telephone is. Then you'll see what a car is. Then you'll see what writing a letter is all about. See what carpool is. You call people, you try to rev the shit up for somebody. Even if it doesn't work out, the fact that you thought about that person. Invite somebody on a Tuesday, not on a Friday night when you see them in shul and they feel like a shmata, because they already prepared for Shabbos. But you invite them on a Tuesday, it shows you thought about them. You cared about them. Get involved in Shidduchim. What do I have to tell you here in Manhattan? The terrible problem of Shidduchim, it's all over the world. The mechazik people. And these in Yonim. And if you write it down, the chesed that you did every day, one a day. If you do 10, that's great. But write down one. And keep that little spiral. You'll see, you won't be able to go to sleep at night after a month until you did something for somebody else. You'll feel so different, and you'll see the world will react to you in the most incredible, incredible ways. You write down, you make up, you're going to learn Mishnayos every day. You learn two Mishnayos, and you wrote it down. I know a fellow who learned the Philadelphia Yeshiva many, many years ago. He had a chavrusa. They've been learning for 40 years, 40 years on the phone. They don't live in the same neighborhood. They've gone through Mishnah Berurah many, many times. They've gone through all of Mishnayos many times. He told me that sometimes they learn 2 o'clock in the morning because they don't want to break the cycle. Of course, that's not when the average Seder is. It's usually a place, 8, 9 o'clock. They learn for 10, 15 minutes. But sometimes the guy's on a business trip. The guy's at a chasana. But we got to learn. We wrote it down. We got a chart. Every night we got to learn. So of course you're going to learn 2 o'clock in the morning that night because you don't want to break it. Because once you break it, one night, two nights, that's it. It's over. Small Kabbalahs, write it down. And the fourth way, do it with a chavrusa. To the partner. If you learn yourself, it's wonderful, but if you learn with the chavrusa, each one is mechayev, one the other. Sometimes you're tired, sometimes you're busy. And we're all busy. And we're all tired. We live difficult lives. But if you do with the chavrusa, even reading shidduchim, getting together with people to read shidduchim, men with men, women with women, you do it together, it's a different type of thing. So a group of women in Far Rockaway, in the five towns, they started something called CNN, Chesed Network News. Two women got together and decided they're going to put a newsletter out. People who need Chesed and people who need certain rides, as an example, from Far Rockaway to Brooklyn, started with a little newsletter. Today it's an 8-page monthly that comes out. People who need chairs and tables and babysitters or whatever, all kinds of gemachs. But when you do it together, all these type of things happen. So let's review everything that we said. And we'll end with a great, great story and a great thought. Let's remember, Elul is echad le'oilah ve'echad le'chatas. Elul is for everyone. No matter how good, or chas v'shalom, how bad the year was, We should never be broken because of that. Echad la'oila, we want to go up in Madregas, and of course Echad la'chatas, if we have regret, we're going to try to change. Let's remember that the past sometimes can be difficult. That's what the Or HaChaim tells us. That's his lashon. And somebody brought that lashon. Atas Hashem hi sakum. Sakum is chilos ekoitzim v'soif ha-mishar. Let's not be intimidated by the difficult path in the beginning. Aryeh shav milo yira. Aryeh, the lion is roaring. El Rosh Hashanah Yom HaKippurim. Hashanah Rabbah. Milo yira, aren't we going to be afraid? The answer is, of course, we're afraid, but we're going to accept that challenge. You know why? Because we're the people of the hay. The people of the hay, we know that no matter how low a person fell, a person can still come back and still open up and still get in to that door of tshuva. We have to be machazik ourselves in learning. That's why there's time zones. Hashem wants to see learning 24/7. Different people learn at different times. Make a seder in learning. Let's be more careful coming to the minyan on time. Being medayik in every word of the tefillah. Every single one of us before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Tell you a story about Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky was once using the art school Marzeh in Philadelphia. So somebody came over to him, said, Rosh Hashiva, maybe it doesn't pass, you know, like using an English Marzeh. So Rav Shmuel showed him one of the piyutim. He asked him, he said, you see the taich, you know the taich of these words? The guy said, no. He said, I don't either. I'd like to know what I'm davening. So if Rav Shmuel's not embarrassed, we shouldn't be embarrassed. Shouldn't we have a Seder and know what V'chom Aminim is all about? We can all sing V'chom Aminim, every one of us. Shouldn't we know what we're talking about? And what are we talking about? So you make a Seder in the next week, pick out a few piyutim, and you concentrate on them. We should have a Seder knowing davening, knowing what the halalukas are. There's a fabulous, fabulous Sefer. It's a Sefer Kodesh Admiyoid, put out by Art Scroll, Rav Avram Chaim Foya and Shemoy Nesrei. It's one of my favorite Sfarim that Art Scroll ever put out. Take a look, every single page, it'll tell you about Shemoy Nesrei. Your Shemoy Nesrei will be totally different. You'll see what Vilam Al-Shidim is talking about. You'll see what Michal Kechayim is talking about. Allah Tzadikim. Shemoy Nesrei is a way of our connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should have a Seder in Tefillah. We should come on time. At the end, I come is not good enough, like we heard that story about the fire. Let's begin being a little bit more careful. And now, Ben Adam L'Chaveiroi. And how are we going to do these things? We can do these things by having a Rav, a Rebbe, or a Rosh Hashiva that you ask your Shailas to. All kinds of Shailas. Of course, not only Halach Shailas, but Ashkofa Shailas. School, stock, vacations, making small Kabbalas, not trying to turn over the world, small things. Charting, writing down your accomplishments, and then doing it with a partner. Just want to end with this thing. Some of you may know, in the last couple of years, I had a great tzchus to take many, many people, hundreds and hundreds of people, to Lithuania, and to Poland, and to Frankfurt, Prague, and Vienna. As I mentioned before, Mendy and I went this past year to Lithuania, a trip that was le'ela. I got an email this afternoon from a girl in England. She said to me, one of her teachers asked her in English, she said, did the trip change your life? She said, the trip didn't change my life. It made my life. Another girl from England wrote also, she said, I'm so happy that I'm not married until at this point, because now I understand what my life is all about, the type of person that I should be looking for. When you hear about all the gedolim, all the tzaddikim, all the mesiras nefesh, how all those people died al kiddush Hashem, and how we have to live al kiddush Hashem. So in the summer of 2006, they asked me that I should take the group to Budapest. I'd never been to Budapest before. So of course, every place that I go, I do a tremendous amount of research, want to know what the Yidden lived like. So I went to a fellow, Avram Schoenberger, in Borough Park. He lived through that Gehenim in Budapest in the early 1940s when the Germans in Yimach Shemam came. And he told me something that happened on the Danube River. The Danube River, they lined up people along the boardwalk of the river and they literally shot Yidden into the water and they killed them. Not only that, they would tie Yidden together, three Yidden together, and only shoot the middle one. And then three of them would fall in because of the force of this guy being propelled into the water. And some of them were saved only because Raoul Wallenberg, that wonderful person, it was not a Yid, but he had a feeling for Yidden. He had divers on the other side of the Danube River. They dove in. They would cut the cords of those people that were still breathing that hadn't been shot. As I mentioned before, my mechutin Alex Kramer from Los Angeles, he calls me up before the trip and he says, you know, I want to come with you, but you know that I can't because I'm a Kohen. So the first part of the trip, I cannot go because you go to all the Kvarim, Sam Sefer, Avsham Shafal Hirsch, the Yanuka, the Stolner Rebbe, all different places. But I'll meet you in Budapest. Because in Budapest, you're going to be only a day and a half. You're not going to go to any of the Kvarim. You'll go to a Holocaust museum and to some shuls. I come from Hungary. I have relatives. I haven't seen them in a long time. I'll meet you there. I said, Alex, it's worth it for you to schlep all the way from L.A. to Budapest for a day and a half. He said, I'll be with you with my wife. We'll spend a day and a half together. I'll spend time with my relatives. It's worth it. Sure enough, I come the last day. I come into the hotel in Budapest, and there's Alex Kramer waiting for me. We sit down to eat. He says, I have to show you something. He says, do you know what happened on the Danube River? I said, yeah, of course I know. The way they lined up the Yidden, they shot them. He said, I was there today. They recently made a memorial. He says, I want to show you the memorial. You won't believe it. Takes out a digital camera, and he shows me the memorial along the Danube River. My mouth dropped open. All it was empty shoes. Lined up shoes of parents, shoes of grandparents, and shoes of little children. They're all bronze and nailed into the boardwalk so that nobody can take them. And then he says to me, he says, Pesach, I want to tell you, I never told you this. He says, my mother was on that line. I said, Alex, what are you talking about? He says, I wasn't born yet. But my mother was on that line. She was holding my older sister, who was 2 years old. And she was about to be shot. And as she was about to be shot, Wallenberg came down and he had 10 visas. And the Germans, Yamach Shemam, they were very punkluch, that he said, you got 10 visas? You can take off 10 people. So he went up and down and he picked out the youngest women with the youngest children. And he said, he saved my mother and my sister. And years later, I was born. I said, Alex, we're going to go tomorrow with all the people. You're going to tell them the story right there. The next day, we come, and as I'm sitting there at night, I knew that I had to speak, I had to say something. So I said to my wife and to all that was sitting at my table, I said, I need a pasuk about shoes. Who knows a pasuk, a chazal? Somebody tell me something about shoes. So you know today, women know Tanakh better than men. So my wife says to me, you don't know the pasuk in Amos Beis, pasuk Vav? I said, no, what are you talking about? She says, what do you mean? It's the Haftarah, Parshas Vayeshev. I said, what are you talking about? She says, you know that pasuk? The pasuk says, Koyam Arashem, Ashleshe Pisha Yisrael, Va'al Arbo Alo Yashivenu, on three Averis, I could forgive the shift they caught that they did. But on the fourth one, Lo Yashivenu, I cannot be moichel them. Amochlam V'kesef Tzadik V'Evyoin Bavun Alayim. Because they sold that poor tzadik for a lousy pair of shoes. When they sold Yosef, what, he sold for a lot of money? They were not looking to get money for him. They just want to get rid of them. They sold them for a pair of shoes. That, Hashem says, he can't be Michael. So, I knew that that's what I would say. The next day we come there. I told the people the story, but I didn't tell them the memorial that was there. We walked there. The people there could not believe it. People crying. We started saying, Tilam, Amaro's Bob, El Shom Yashavnu, Gambochino. It was a maimed. It was incredible, the Tilam. It was amazing. And I said to everyone, look at this Danube River, blue water. It's not blue water. It's filled with red Yiddish blood. I came back to America. And although there have been many, many highlights of the trip, this was the thing that I was talking about more than anything else. And then before Yom Kippur last year, my Rav and my Shul, Rav Shlomo Tarabam, says to me, as he says every year, so do me a favor, you're the one, you'll make the appeal, Yom Kippur on Yiska. I got up at Yiska last year, Yom Kippur. I said to the people, something stunning happened in our shul, Rosh Hashanah. Everybody's looking at me, what happened, Rosh Hashanah? We were all here, Rosh Hashanah, nothing happened. I said, not only that, it happened the second day as well. Everybody's looking, what happened the second day? And the first day. And I tell them the whole story about the Danube River. Then I tell them, you know I'm not a Kohen, but I daven near the front of the shul. The first day, Rosh Hashanah, by Birchas Kohanim, by Duchening, I had the talus over my head. Then when I took the talus off my head, I took a look by the Yaron Kodesh. I saw a whole row of empty shoes. I saw shoes of parents, shoes of grandparents, and shoes of little children. And I had to put the talus over my head. I couldn't look at it. Because I remember those shoes on the Danube River. And then the second day Yom Tov, of course I was prepared for it. I couldn't stop looking at those shoes, especially the shoes of the children. And I thought to myself, what's the difference between these shoes that we see in every Beis Medrash and the shoes on the Danube River? And the answer is, of course, these shoes, in a few minutes, Levadika people will be able to fill these shoes. And they'll be able to be Mekadeshem Shemayim. They'll be able to learn, they'll be able to daven, to be able to do chesed, but those shoes remain empty forever. And that's our reason for being in this world. That's our legacy. To fill those shoes that can no longer be filled. To fill those spiritual shoes of our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents that can no longer be filled. As I told you before, my mother passed away a little more than 11 months ago. I just finished saying Kaddish. So many times when I said Kaddish, I wondered, why not once? Not even once do you mention the person who you're saying Kaddish for. Somebody walks into shul, a guy's saying Kaddish, wouldn't you want to know, why is he saying Kaddish? What happened here? And I believe that Kaddish is not only for the Nifter. Kaddish is for the person that's saying Kaddish. You know why? Because Kol Zman, a person is alive, he can be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. He can do something for Klal Yisrael. But when he dies or she dies, there's a vacuum, there's a void, there's an emptiness. Who's going to fill that void? Who's going to fill that vacuum? That's what the Yosin says over and over and over. Yiskadal v'yiskadah Shemei Rabo. I'm going to fill that vacuum. I'm going to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. There's an emptiness, I'm going to fill it. I'm going to fill those shoes. That's what Elul is all about. The commitment to fill those shoes of those people who can no longer be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. When you go through Europe and you go through all those places of Gehenna and you see and you realize how many people died al Kiddush Hashem, we have to thank Hashem a million times over that we live in America. We live in places like Canada, free countries, where we can be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. Our Nisoyan is to live al Kiddush Hashem. So I just want to end with this thought. We started out with Aryeh Shov Milo Yira, right? Let me tell you why we shouldn't be afraid. You know, because there's another pasuk. The pasuk is Hein Om Kelavi Yakum Uch Ari Yisnaso. Klal Yisrael has that capacity to roar back as a lion and to elevate itself. Yisnaso Ech La'Oila VeEch La'Chatas. It's no question. These are days of trepidation, but the Ibn Shem doesn't give us a challenge that we can't meet. Hein Om Kelavi Yakum. Let us make a commitment to Torah, to Tefillah, to Avos Yisrael, by having a Rebbe, doing it with a chavrusa, making small kabbalas, writing it down. Then we can change. Then we can influence others. Then we'll be able to say Olai L'Hokim. And then we'll be able to give chizuk to every single one of our brothers and sisters in Klal Yisrael. David should help that we should make the most of these Heilige Teg, Vizoicha, to see Mashiach in our time. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.
Thank you very much.